Hello and welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, the Cinelinks podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. Wherever you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at stevedunk5 or at everythingcanon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Britta Lundin all about her new book, Like Other Girls, which is described as a fiercely charming and achingly relatable, a glorious, empowering touchdown. Britta Lundin's sophomore novel will give readers all the feels and make them stand up and cheer. Like Other Girls does several things well, one of which is giving us a very realistic look at high schoolers in a small conservative American town. These aren't hyper-realized versions of teens that we normally get. They feel very real and very age-appropriate, making the book land somewhere between a slice of life and a local state football championship. With a good look at both internalized and externalized misogyny, Britta's book is at times a very funny look at the fragility of the male ego, and at others, a very important coming-of-age story. We talk about her glorious but short stint on HBO's Betty, growing up in small towns, women's sports, Like Other Girls, of course, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, now that we can do that again, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices, this, of course, should be done all year long. And as a reminder that August is Black Business Month, so get out there and support Black-owned businesses. I'm partial to independent bookstores myself, so safely seek out any Black-owned independent bookstores close to you or online and give them some of your money. Britta Lundin is a TV writer and author. She has written for shows such as Riverdale, The Big Leap, and Betty, something I definitely want to talk about because I fucking love that show. A longtime fan fiction reader and writer, she can track her life milestones by what she was shipping at the time. Originally from the Pacific Northwest, she went to film school in Austin, Texas, and now lives with her wife and their dog, and Lemon Tree in Los Angeles. She released her first book, Ship It, in 2018, but she's here today to talk about her new book, Like Other Girls, which is described as a fiercely charming and achingly relatable, a glorious, empowering touchdown. Britta Lundin's sophomore novel will give readers all the feels and make them stand up and cheer. Please welcome to the show, Britta Lundin. Hi, Britta.
Hey.
I do want to start out with, I have to give credit where credit is due, because thanks so much to Dahlia Adler for getting me into this book.
She's the best.
The hardest working woman I know, or human I know anyway, for sure. Like,
yeah.
God, she's busy. And I was interviewing her way back when for Cool for the Summer, which is also a ton of fun.
Yes, a wonderful book.
We were talking about just stuff that's coming that she's in love with, and she told me about this book, and so full credit to Dahlia, who is just the best, and we love her.
Well, that's so nice. Thank you.
Yes. Like the your wonderful bio says, you are primarily a television writer. How is the TV gig going these days?
You know, it's fun. Being a TV writer is a lot of fun because, unlike book writing, it's not a solo activity. It's like, in non-COVID days, it's, you know, 10 writers in a room talking about story. And these days it's 10 writers in a Zoom room talking about story, which isn't as good, but yeah. At least it's not as lonely as book writing can sometimes be.
It, I mean, that's the thing with the past year and a half, hasn't really cramped a lot of styles when it comes to authors who are on deadlines, unfortunately, because they're shut-ins already. Right. So,
yeah.
So that's been something that's been come up a lot the last authors that I've been talking to. So do you think, you know, you're inside behind the curtain there with the television and the studios, and how is this, do you think you're ever going to be back to full, like, is Zoom here to stay for you guys, you think? Or,
you know, I think definitely writer's rooms are coming back, and I'm torn about it because on one hand, being on Zoom blows. So I don't like that. But on the other hand, you know, when you're a TV writer, you really have to live in Los Angeles. There's no other options for you.
Right, right.
And there's a part of me that's always yearning to move back to the Pacific Northwest where I'm from. Mm. And you know, that's probably part of why I've written a couple of books now set in the Pacific Northwest, just so that I can at least go there,
right. Yeah.
In my imagination. But
right.
Unless Zoom rooms become more of a permanent thing, then TV writers will continue to be forced to live in a city that's just getting hotter and hotter and running out of water. So no big deal.
It is running out of water. And God, we were with the heat. I hope, obviously, I hope, you know, you guys, I think you're sort of on the back end of the heat wave now, aren't you? But I hope everyone was safe during that time and cool and all that wonderful stuff, and take advantage of the air conditioning if you've got it, if you can afford it. It's sort of tying into that is you are very brave. You're doing an in-person event for this book.
Oh, yes.
Week. Are you nervous? I'm excited for sure. I have no doubt, but
I'm excited. It's, you know, it's so funny. It's like you work on these books for so long. Writing a book takes years. Yeah. And I think I first started thinking about this story in like maybe 2015 or something like that.
Okay.
And I started writing it when Ship It came out. So in 2018, and it's just now coming out in 2021. So it just, it for so long, it's just like a Word document on your desktop or a Google Doc. And now it's finally out. And if I didn't do something, I would just be like, it would just be another Tuesday, you know? So I am a little nervous, but I'm excited as well. We're not doing an event because the bookstores aren't doing those yet, but Skylight Books in Los Angeles is just one of my favorite bookstores here. Graciously said, well, we'll put you up for a signing so you can sit at a table and we'll spread it out and people can come over a period of time over the evening and come and get their book signed. So hopefully it won't be a big slam of people all at once, but I'm really excited just to see people who I haven't seen in like a year and a half and to sign books. And like, I'm an extrovert, so I just feed off of that. I just will imagining my battery filling up as people come in to like get my book and have it signed.
That's very cool. I'm up in Toronto. I'm a little nervous. I think I'm booked to go down to Y'all Fest in Charleston in November, and I'm a little scared to go into the belly of the beast. You Americans scare me a little bit lately, but it is, I've been missing it because I'm in the States quite a bit, actually, just conventions and stuff, you know, half a dozen times a year at least. And so I'm cautiously optimistically excited mark. So I don't know, it's going to be weird, but we were talking about age appropriate fetishes there before we went on, and one of mine is I really fucking love seeing people meet their heroes, their idols, whatever's. And because I'm such a fan of reading and authors, I really love seeing people meet, you know, authors that they admire.
Yeah.
And I stand back and I watch it. I love the energy. I love the emotion. I love all of it. And I'm especially happy for authors. And I'm so sad for all the debuts last year who didn't get to it, because you never get that debut back, right? You just can't recapture that moment. But so I'm very excited. I'm happy for you, and I'm very excited to start seeing that again, to see these. I love it. I just love seeing lines of people telling authors how great their books are and how it's affected their life in this way or that way. And it's why I love going to conventions so much too, cons, because I just love seeing, it's great. It's such a great emotional, you know, energy, and I feed off it, right? I just need it. So very happy for you. So that's really cool. And that'll be on your website, I assume, right? Or in socials and all that stuff. And
all the details. Yeah. It's going to be August 3rd, and all the details are on my website.
Beautiful. Betty. I love Betty. I freaking love Betty. Love that show. So you have a producing credit for all of season one, and then a writing credit for the tombs. So usually some people, when you get a producing credit, that many producing credits, that means you've chipped in some writing. And because there's some weird union rules, right, where you can't list 18 writers on a show or something.
Some writers' rooms have like a huge room, like 12. I think Riverdale had like 12 writers in that room or something like that. And some shows, I mean, like Betty, I think we had five writers on that show. And yeah, so everyone over a certain level, once you reach a certain level in the writer's room of like a producer level, you get a producer credit on every episode,
right.
Which is very nice. It means your name gets at the front of the credits and, you know, your mom finally believes that what you said you've been doing is an actual job.
Well, and you get a paycheck, right? Which is,
yeah, you get a, yeah, the pay is okay.
Yep. So why, unless it's a really evil, bad story, how come no season two for you?
Oh, you know, they really, it's funny. I'm such a West Coast kid and that is such a New York show.
Yeah.
That, I think a lot of what I was bringing to the table was like, there's several queer storylines in that, at which I, you know,
yep.
Nothing gets me more excited to write about TV than to write about queer characters. So I was bringing a lot to the table on that front, but I really don't know shit about New York.
Right.
So I was like, Yonkers, that's a thing, right? Yonkers?
Let's have them go to the Empire State Building. Yeah.
Would they skateboard to Times Square? Is that? I remember once I was like, well, she would just maybe, I don't know. There was some reason the character lost her shoes. And I was like, well, she'll just be barefoot. And one of our showrunners who's from New York is like, you never walk barefoot in New York. Like, was like so strong. I was like, oh, that's a thing. Okay. You don't walk barefoot in New York. Okay. Gotcha. Got it. I was like, you know, I'm just too West Coast for that show.
Right.
But I still love it. And, you know, watching season two, I love that show. And, I landed now on a new show that's coming out in the fall called The Big Leap, which is about a bunch of like average Americans who join a dancing reality show. So it's very like aspirational on the dancing front, but a little bit like skewering reality TV, which okay. is really fun for me. And it's a dramedy, so it's very funny. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Really cool. So that comes out in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
On which network?
Fox.
Evil Fox.
No, the Good Fox.
The Good Fox. Evil one. Sorry. Yeah.
They're different companies now.
Not Tucker Carlson Fox. Yeah.
No. Yeah, it just comes on right after Tucker Carlson.
It's in between. It's just, they squeeze it right in between Tucker and I don't even know like what's after him. I don't even know.
Yeah.
The Devil Network is after him.
Yeah, it's just an aspirational, very funny dancing show, you know? Just a palate cleanser.
It's just sort of light in the mood, yeah. Yeah, it's like a wine tasting. You got to get a little bit of water in there.
Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. And so I loved... in particular, The Tombs was a really great episode.
You know, thank you.
That there's, you know, it's stuck in that jail cell and then poor Kurt on the outside trying to make amends. And just such it was a really great episode. And yeah, big fan of that show. So congratulations. That was really cool.
Thank you.
I guess, I don't know if you, yeah, I guess I'll say this. So I used to write for the force.net. So do you want to have a Star Wars talk or do you want to skip it? Because I know you're a Star Wars fan now.
I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
I don't like any, we can talk about anything you want. Do you keep up to date? Tell me how much of it do you absorb? Just the movies, any of the animated stuff, the books, the comics?
Oh yeah. I don't do that. I do the movies and I do, fan fiction.
Okay. Oh, beautiful.
That's what I do.
Two good things.
I mean, I know everything is canon, on your podcast, but,
yep.
I don't follow the ancillary works as much,
yeah.
Unless those ancillary works are written by unpaid fans.
Understood. It's a little dry on the film front right now because they, you know, felt like they were had sort of, you know, watered that camel too often. So they're, mm-hmm. you know, switching to other things and stuff, which is great for, I've been a big Star Wars reader for decades now. So I'm very happy this big focus on the publishing side of things. And I'm very into that. So I was watching one interview where you were talking about you know, your love of the prequels and stuff, and so that was really cool. So I thought I'd just say you're from one Star Wars fan to another. It's nice to meet you.
Well, may the force be with you.
Yes, and also with you. That was a funny god. I'm so like Ted, do you watch Ted Lasso? Or you have uh-huh. you followed?
Yeah,
that line in the season two, episode one, where the one guy's got to go home and watch Empire Strikes Back with his kid. And he's trying to think of ways to explain why Leia and Luke kissed in the first one to his son. And then as he's leaving and Ted's like, hey, come here. And he's like, gives them the may the force be with you. It's just like, that's kind of a funny.
Yeah.
It's such a part of just the lexicon now, isn't it? But anyways, so I had never read Ship It. So I thought I'd go online and read a little bit about it, trying to see the reaction to it. And whoo. Some strong opinions on both sides on that one.
When you dive into fandom discourse, that's bound to happen.
100% agree. I love, and I have to think you were sitting back in your evil chair, like, you know, twirling your mustache and, you know, doing the Mr. Burns laugh or something, you know, because I have to think a lot of that reaction was exactly the what you were looking, hoping to get, because, you know, you want strong reactions on either side, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's interesting. If you look at the sort of layout of the ratings of a book and all the ratings are like, oh, it's kind of a 3, you're like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe I won't check out that book. But if you look at the reactions of a book and it's got the inverse where there's like a bunch of 5s and then a bunch of 1s,
yep,
you're like, there's something going on. This author this author said something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And people are reacting to it. And, you know, that's not going to be for everyone, but I think that's ultimately how Ship It ended up. It was actually a surprise to me a little bit because, you know, I'm someone who comes from fandom. Fandom is my background. I've been reading fan fiction since the dawn of the internet. Mm-hmm. And
since American Online or
I had Netscape, but yes. And back when it was like urch to mm-hmm. get online.
Oh yes.
And you know, I wrote this book from a place of love.
Yeah.
But I also don't think fandom is above critique. And I think the book offers some fair critiques of some of the more, let's say, complicated aspects of fandom.
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
And I think that, you know, people who know me, who read that book, probably know where I'm coming from. But, you know, when you put a book out into the world, nobody knows who you are. And so, you know, I could say I come from fandom, but if you're a reader who maybe fandom is really close to you, maybe that's some like a way that you've been able to manage, you know, a difficult high school period or a difficult period in your life. And it's something that's really important to you. And then this author comes along who you don't know from Bupkis and she starts saying like, hey, parts of fandom are kind of messed up. Then you might have a pretty strong emotional reaction to that.
Yeah, they're like, boo! there's also this really gross double standard now, and it's come up a lot the last few years in books that I've read and authors that I've talked to, where lead characters who aren't likable necessarily, the way, you know, women are treated compared to men mm-hmm. is still gross and like just that canyon is vast. And you know, I love reading a book where, you know, where the lead character is a woman or a girl and she's not likable at all, and mm-hmm. because I love that challenge. I love that this idea that, you know, how you react to this person says more about you than them. And It tells me an awful lot about, you know, readers, the way they react to certain characters. And I love lately how a lot of authors are challenging that notion. And I think it's a really good way to sort of float to the surface a lot of like just shitty fucking crappy people who, you know, have been just, you know, applaud, you know, on one hand will applaud like a male lead for being, you know, all the stupid gross things that we love from our male leads, but mm-hmm. you know, shit on a female lead for the same thing, right? So anyways, yeah. it's one of those, that's a weird thing, and I kind of picked up on some of that with the reaction to Ship It.
It's something that I've tried to not make that make me a cautious writer, because I don't want, you know, as I was writing Like Other Girls, which is a book that with another very complicated, potentially unlikable female character at the front of it, you know, I could hear the chorus of people telling me why they didn't like her in the back of my head. Right. And I think a lot of that came from the reaction to Ship It. And I didn't want to listen to that.
Yeah, like I was going to ask you if that had any effect on you know, on this book at all? And I would, I hope the answer was no, but you're human.
Yeah. So I hope the answer is no too. Yeah. And it's certainly, I heard it.
yep.
You know, and I like acknowledge that it's there, and I acknowledge that, you know, that book didn't work for some people, and it really, really worked for other people.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
So it was divisive, you know, there were people who loved it and people who hated it. And I think that might be the case for like other girls as well, because it's about a character who, she's angry. When we first meet her, she's punching another girl. So she's got some aggression. She's got some violence that she's got to deal with. And she's got a lot of internalized misogyny. And there was a real debate in my head about how much of that can you put on the page before people just put the book down and say, you know what, I'm not going to read the rest of this, because this girl is, I don't like her so much that I'm not going to bother seeing her journey. And for me, it's all about the journey. And I think that where the book gets to is really interesting and hopefully a hopeful place. Yeah. But I would often think, wow, if someone just read the first 20 pages of this and like put it down, they would miss out on all of that.
Oh, well, that's it's a really great point. This book is all about the journey. I mean, there barely is a destination in it. And I think it works really, really well. And also, yeah, to your point, these fucking people that like DNF'd at 17%, but still have the gall to leave a review. I'm like, fuck you. Fuck off. Like, get off my planet. Sorry. I was saying to someone the other day too, I wish, you know, things like Goodreads had an algorithm that like, as soon as you type the letters DNF, it locks you out from typing anything further. I'm sorry. You forfeited your right. But,
I wish Goodreads had any features whatsoever. I wish there was.
Good point.
I wish it wasn't literally the worst website. Not because of the people who use it. It's just almost a non-functional website.
It is a strange. The software is weird. It's like something really like abstract and archaic, and it's like it feels like it's constantly like, I just feel like there's someone behind the scenes constantly typing into like an old Commodore, like trying to keep up with the updates. And like, but
she wants to search for James Patterson.
They're like, God, Harry Potter again. Yeah, it's like, all right, yeah. Let's get to the book, but just really quickly too, I just want, how do you take all that? How do you take criticism? Are you, I mean like real criticism. I don't mean fucking some asshole just being an asshole, but.
Well, that's the biggest issue, right? On the internet, it is so hard to be able to tell the good faith criticism from the bad faith criticism. So it's really difficult. So you see a negative review and you're like, did this book just not work for that person? Or is this a fair critique of my book that I should think about in the future?
Yeah.
And the answer is you just can't take critique from random randos on the internet. You have to take it from people you know and trust. So for me, you know, that comes from having conversations with author friends, from having writers groups, from my therapist, you know, from people I know and love and trust, because I know that they're not going to give me bad faith criticism, that there's an issue, from having sensitivity readers, from my editor, you know, my agent, all of this stuff. That's where I take critique from. And, you know, unfortunately for Goodreads reviewers, I cannot base my future work off of what they thought of my last work. It's just never going to work for me as an author or for them. It's just not a feasible system.
I understand, like, you know, as a human, this desire to want people to like what you put out into the world and just that base curiosity, right? Like of what people think, what they're saying. I understand that, but I've always encouraged authors to stay away from Goodreads. If for any other reason, and it's sort of, you were alluding to it, and I can say this because I'm in the blogosphere group, right? I don't do much on Goodreads, but because I have platforms, but these people don't have any credibility. Right. Yeah. Like I'm sorry, most of them do not. They're not trained in anything, they're not certified in anything. There's no course you can take. There's no college degree of blogging. You know what I mean? Like there's obviously things you can take that help with that, writing classes, writing courses, and you know, different things like this, even marketing to a certain degree, because a lot of them have a brand they're trying to push, but or an agenda. But these people don't know anything from Adam. Like they just happen to read a lot of books. You know what I mean? So, and good for them, but that's what I would say to an author. Like, just look at, take it, you know, look at the source, right? Consider the source before you get too upset about it. And again, to your point, choose your sources, choose your trust sources, right? Like the people that know you and love you and appreciate you and can give you honest feedback. And you're like, you know what? You're right. That's a great, what a fucking great, great bit of a critique there. So anyways, that's everyone's free, free advice for the day. Let's talk about better things. Like, actually, no, let's not talk about better things, because you're trying to kill me with this book, because it's all things that I hate. Sports, religion, farming. What else?
Farming?
Well, not vegetable farming.
It is. There's a lot of cattle in it.
There's some cattle stuff. Yeah. What else do I don't like about this? I'm being glib, but I love this book very much. I really enjoyed it. I read it straight through. And but yeah, no, like, this town is a nightmare for me even. So I can't imagine somebody like Mara. Do you say Mara or Mara?
I say Mara.
Mara. Okay. Do you want to practice any elevator pitches, or you want me just to read the summary?
No, I'll do it. So okay. Like Other Girls is about Mara, who's a high school lesbian who's in the closet, who has always spent her time with the other guys. Her best friend is a guy. She hangs out a lot with her brother. She's 6'2" and she's very physical. And she's spent a lot of time on her cattle ranch, you know, roughhousing and messing around with her friends. And so when she gets in trouble for fighting on her basketball team and gets kicked off her basketball team, the only way the basketball coach will let her back on to the team the following year is if she can prove that she can play a team sport without fighting. And so volleyball is not really her speed. And so she decides, you know what, I'm going to join the football team. And at first it goes really great. She's tall, she's broad, she's great at football. She has like a natural inclination for it. And she likes being tackled, and she loves tackling people. So the guys kind of reluctantly accept her. She's kind of like one of them. And then the worst thing that could happen happens, which is the next week, 4 more girls join the team, inspired by Mara, looking up to her, seeing her as some sort of role model, and thinking of this as some kind of, you know, movement. And to Mara, this is not a movement. And the last thing she wants is to be lumped in with these other girls. Suddenly she's not just Mara, who's on the football team. She's one of the girls. And she doesn't see herself as being someone who is, wink, wink, like other girls.
Right.
So her journey over the course of the book is to sort of, you know, accept, to sort of overcome and challenge some of the internalized misogyny that she has, and figure out why is it that she has such a problem being lumped in with the other girls.
Mm-hmm. You know, she's constantly fighting against, pushing against labels and being labeled. And then she finds herself being constantly labeled, right? I mean, even the group, they become known as the Elkhorn Five and all these other things. And so, yeah, she's constantly pushing back on all of that. I love, you know, we've seen sort of like this, you know, like Just One of the Guys. There was even, what's that? Isn't there an 80s movie called Just One of the Guys or something? What was that? There's some, anyways, like where they,
that sounds like an 80s movie.
It does. Right. But, you know, only be, you know, and it's the inverse almost of what the story you're telling, but, and we've seen similar ish things, people sort of like basically going in drag to make the soccer team or
right.
whatever. But anyways, I always love the coaches in these stories because they're fucked, right? And they know it.
Yeah.
Because they can't, you know, they can't be seen, you know, refusing to let in this instance a girl play football. It's always a funny, that always makes for funny moments, I think, because the coach in the story is not the worst person in the book. He's not helping necessarily, but he's not the worst. He's just more he's more of a bumbling idiot, isn't he, than anything else. And so, which is always great for funny moments. One of the things I liked about this book was they feel like real kids to me. Like there's no hyper realized or like fantastical versions of what a teenager should be. Right. Like basically they're all idiots, and you know, many of their actions, good and bad, seem
they seems like realistic to me, like toned down, but like in an appropriate way, right? Like it's, there's no like massive grand gestures. There's no chosen ones. There's no like, you know, like they all seem very sort of like normal people to me. So for me, the stories like fall somewhere between like slice of life and a state football championship. You know what I mean? Like it's somewhere in that sweet spot there. So talk to me about like, you're right, this book is very much about the journey and like, you know, what I said earlier was only joking. There is a destination, but it's very much like a life goes on too.
Right. Yeah. I think one of the things that I chose to do early on when I was writing this book was I didn't make the football team a really, really good football team.
Right.
In fact, they're really bad.
They're awful.
They're just a bad football team. So whether there's girls on it or not, doesn't really make a difference, you know, in terms of like, it's not like, you know, they're going to state championships or anything like that. So, because I really wanted to keep the focus of this book on the gender politics and not necessarily on like the football. There's no big moment where it's like the game's on the line and if they make this touchdown, they're going to win state and, you know, there's glory. And that's not a scene in the book. The scenes of the book are about, you know, can Mara learn to appreciate these other girls on the team? What can her friendship with her best friend Quinn survive this, you know, fracture that happens when she joins the team? What's going to happen with Mara and her brother Noah, who's the quarterback on the team? That's where I wanted to keep the focus, and at no point did I want it to turn into some sort of like flashy, you know, teen sports movie. So in that sense, I think readers who love sports will be naturally inclined to pick up this book anyway. But I think that readers who maybe like you are very sports averse, I would say it's not really a sports book. In fact, it's kind of an anti-sports book. It's really more about gender politics than anything else. Yeah.
And it's almost in a sense, like, you know, it just happens to be football. You could insert almost anything, I guess, too, right? It could be, I don't know, like football works obviously because of the gender role part of it for sure, because that's one sport that women haven't broken through yet. You know, I don't know the numbers of women, like if there's a loud scream for women to start playing football or not. I honestly have no idea.
Actually the numbers are on the rise. It's really interesting to see, because when I was a teenager, I played flag football as a youth. And when it came time to play, to like graduate to tackle football, I sort of looked around me and it was very clear that nobody wanted me playing tackle football but me.
Right.
Like my friends didn't want it and the guys on the team didn't want it, so I didn't do it. But nowadays it's way more common. Like people would bat an eye as much.
It's strictly, to me, it seems, and again, from an outsider's point of view, it just seems like a really bullshitty, like Western male chauvinistic thing still, because women around the world play much tougher sports, right? Like there's rugby and crazier, you know, more contact sports, boxing, like MMA, go down the list, right? Like they do all these things that are really way more like, than like fat guys on the sidelines sucking oxygen in because they had to run for 20 seconds. You know what I mean? Like it's, you know, so it's funny to me, like that it's the last, you know, bastion of you know, sports that men are trying to hang on to. It seems so comical in a way, like laughable from a, you know, at looking at men I'm talking about, right? Like that, I guess maybe they're trying to hold on to this sport, which I actually find kind of ridiculous. But
and I think one of the reasons why it is seen as such a men's sport is because it is a very violent sport.
Sure.
And it's violent. You know, I was just watching their Olympic rugby game last night, and I don't really understand the rules of rugby.
Neither do I.
A lot of it was me like cocking my head at the television, being like, "Huh, yeah. I wonder what that meant." But it, you know, there it's full contact sport.
Yeah.
But they don't wear helmets and they don't wear pads of any kind. And
I think there's less injuries historically too, isn't there?
Yeah, way less injuries as a result. And the idea is like with football, there's this American sort of male sensibility that we want to make it as intense as possible. So we put them in a helmet and we put them in full contact gear. And as a result, they just lay each other out and they are as violent as possible without getting thrown out of the game. You know,
it is a
and that is one of the things I wanted to play around with in the book, because, you know, when we meet Mara, she's punching another character. She has a violent instinct. She really likes tackling people and likes being tackled. And in some ways, that is a way for her to sort of get out these more aggressive instincts that she has in a more healthy way. And right. I think that's how a lot of us think about football for like young men, is like, oh, well, they can just tackle each other and then they won't be such assholes all the time.
Sure.
And, you know, there may be some truth to that or maybe not. I'm not here to evaluate that, but I wanted to like sort of look at why is this sport so gendered, and what parts of it like could actually be really healthy for women. I think there's a lot about team sports that are beneficial. You know, they build resilience and cooperation and leadership and grit and determination and all the stuff that's useful in other parts of your life. There's a lot of benefit to playing team sports for young people and for adults. And why would we deny that to women? You know?
Yeah, 100%. And like, it's like anything else. If there's interest there, then have at it. Right. I mean, it is, it makes no sense why we're so guarded with certain things. And, you know, people like Mara or, you know, or any marginalized person or people that live in the spectrum or sort of, you know, off to the side are only unique in small, weird towns.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, you've moved. I didn't read all the places you've lived. I saw your interview. You've mentioned all the cities you lived in. You've moved around a lot. And I mean, you go to almost any city or larger and there's interest there. So it just happened that Mara just happened to be born in the wrong weird small town. I don't know, but it is a weird town too, in the sense that like, it's really precarious, the situation in this town, because it's a fairly stress-free high school on the surface. Like as long as you know your lane, stay in your lane, know your role, eat at the table you're supposed to eat at, right? Play the sports you're supposed to play, you know? It's everything, everyone gets along pretty well there. Like there isn't a lot of overt, you know, judgment going on unless it's from God in this very religious town. But we find out that this is all really like teetering, isn't it? Like it doesn't take much to throw the whole fucking thing out of whack. And and this book deals with that. So first it's funny and ha-ha, but then when they realize Mara and the Elkhorn Five are serious and or are at least determined to stick it out through the whole season, the balance just shifts, doesn't it? Like it's almost like the whole town is thrown into a frenzy over it. Like it's and people are praying for them. And like it's completely wacky, right? I'm just curious if you've got sort of, I don't remember the list of cities you mentioned where you lived in, if you've got any small town experience, like where you do? Okay, let's hear it.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a small town. It's not quite as sort of agricultural as Elkhorn is, but you know, I grew up in a place where I felt like I was the only one like me, and I was not out when I was in high school, but I was also, you know, I felt like I stuck out. You know, I only wore clothes from the boys section of the store. You know, I would like come to school in the same clothes as like another guy in my class or something like that. It would be embarrassing for him. Like, why am I wearing girls' clothes? Because
you look better in it. Yeah, yeah. God damn it.
But there's also this feeling that like, you know, I've always kind of like hung out with a lot of guys. And when I'm around, you know, men, like straight men, when it's just me, there's something about me, because, you know, I'm kind of more masculine of center and I'm gay, and I can kind of bro out, you know, like we can talk about sports, we can talk about movies, or, you know, we can talk about women even. But when there's like more women, like if we're in a situation where it's like half men and half women, it's not really clear who I'm supposed to be
Right.
What side I'm supposed to be on. If I'm trying to talk with the men, it's like, why aren't you over there with the women? Or like, oh, don't you ladies worry, the fellas are going to handle this, sure. Whether it's like moving a heavy thing or like operating the grill or whatever. And I always bristle when a situation gets super gendered in that way.
Yeah.
And because I don't know my place and I feel like I'm invisible or being erased. I wanted to kind of explore that with Mara when it's just her on the football team. Everyone's like, all right, this is a little weird, but I guess Mara can hang. She's okay at football.
She's better than half of us. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I guess if it's, yeah, just Mara, we know her. That's okay. And she's like, not fully accepted, but she's like, kind of like, oh, reluctantly. Okay. She's one of the team. And then when there's four more girls, it's like it all goes to shit because they're not broing out the way Mara is. They're right. Like, no, we're girls and we're not afraid of that. We're not going to pretend we're not. And we're not going to pretend like everything's okay because it's not okay. And you guys are being assholes to us. And right. And that is what fractures the team. And suddenly Mara doesn't know where she stands.
Right. But also like, and you know, yeah. And a couple of things too, like Mara also though has to be good. She has to be competent, right? Because yeah. Otherwise it's laughable from the guy's point of view. And it would remain a joke. And also Mara spends, like you said, a lot of energy, like with the guy saying, what's with them? What's with those girls?
Yeah.
Who do they think yeah. Who do they think they are? Yeah. Right. And this is where the, you know, a lot of this internalized and externalized misogyny comes up too. Right. So,
yeah.
And the fact is like, not all the Elkhorn Five are as, you know, athletic as Mara is, right. Some yeah. are, some aren't. But still, even like the ones that are maybe considered not great athletes are still better than some of the guys. But
yeah.
But to your point, because they maintain this sort of much more sort of like feminine appearance, I guess, attitude, all the things you mentioned, the guys yeah. sort of like they jump on that, don't they? Like fucking yeah. like vipers in a way, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, Mara has to like do a lot and even still get shit on. Ultimately, yeah. As you know, as hard as she works, she still, as hard as she tries to be one of the guys, she still gets fucking lumped in with the girls ultimately.
Yeah.
Right. And I love your point about sort of just, it becomes like a numbers game almost, like the scales tip when there's one's okay. One's fine. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. We're okay with one, right? Two, fine. And then like when they get the article about them and the guys are like, I've worked hard my whole fucking life, never been on the front page of this shitty rag. Like, you know, yeah. like it's such a really great way that you slowly have the guys start to realize this isn't a great idea for us, for them,
yeah.
you know, specifically.
Yeah.
That sort of leads me to one thing, and this clock is ticking. I could talk to you all day about this book. When people say, in this case, you know, Mara isn't your typical girl. So insert any name into that sentence, and it makes my fucking skin crawl. Mm-hmm. And I hate that sentence. But that's kind of the thing here, isn't it, with Mara? Like, that's why everything you just said, that's why she's allowed to do the thing she is doing up until a certain point.
Yeah.
Because she isn't, quote, unquote, your typical girl. She's right. one of the guys.
Yeah.
Does that drive you crazy? It drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's why I called the book Like Other Girls, because, right. you know, there's this sort of sexist idea that you can compliment a girl by saying, oh, you're not like other girls, which is like a cool way to compliment one person while tearing down the whole rest of the planet.
You know? Yeah. 60% of the planet. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the tagline for the book is there's more than one way to be like other girls. And right. that's sort of what Mara is coming to terms with over the course of the book. And the beginning right. of the book, she's like, I'm not like other girls. And the truth is, in her, like you said, in her weird little town, she isn't like other girls.
Right.
And she does feel alienated because, you know, she's kind of exploring a sort of more masculine identity. She's, you know, there's a hair cutting scene in the book that I really like where she cuts all her hair off and
it's
her mom
scene,
loses
yep.
her mind. And, but she is like a lot of other girls, just not in her small town. And she doesn't know how to find those girls. And so someday she'll go to college, you know, in Portland and she'll meet other people like her.
And there's coffee and all sorts of wonderful things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Krav Maga or something like that. And she'll be like, oh yeah, she won't feel so lonely. But for right now, she's stuck in this town and she's got to learn to to find her people. And at the beginning of the book, she thinks that her people cannot be girls. And what she kind of comes to learn is like, oh, maybe there is more than one way to be like other girls. And there are ways that I'm like other girls. So that's sort of the idea I wanted to explore in the book. There's a mentor character in the book.
You're reading my mind. You're reading my mind.
Did I hack your notes?
You must have. Because sort of to your point, she's very close to being free of this town and exploring and seeing the world and understanding that she's very not alone in this big world. Yeah. But she gets a taste of it with Jupiter.
Yeah.
So talk about this kindred spirit. She comes to her of all things. Right.
Yeah.
Falls into her life, not the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mara works at like a feed store. And one day this very butch adult lesbian walks into her feed store and Mara's sort of like, who's that?
Huge record scratch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like the Ring of Keys song in Fun Home. It's like, oh, shit. Is everyone else seeing what I'm seeing? I think that person is like me. And so she like goes and introduces herself, and Jupiter is someone who has moved to Elkhorn, who is not from there,
right?
Who's from like the city. She lived in Portland. She lived in the Bay Area. She's from cities with huge queer communities, and she's decided to move to the small town for like a different pace of life with her partner, and they're going to start a little hobby farm. And Jupiter really doesn't know what she's doing, and so she gets Mara to kind of help out on the farm. So Mara gets this little job where she gets to show off things like building a chicken coop and like building a fence and all this stuff that she knows how to do. And along the way, she gets to talk to Jupiter and sort of like, this is someone who is, you know, this is the first person she's able to come out to. This is someone who she's able to ask her opinion on, like, do you think I should join the football team? What do you think I should, there's this girl I like, what do you think I should say to her? You know, it's someone who finally she has someone she can actually talk to. And what Jupiter can tell her is things like, you know, it's going to be a lot different for you when you leave Elkhorn, you know, and she can and provide a little perspective on, well, it sounds like you're being a little misogynistic the way mm-hmm. that you're talking about these girls, right. You know, and can check Mara on some of her biases. And that character is really there for a couple of reasons. And one of them is because I needed a character to be the voice of, hey, Mara, what you're thinking and doing right now is really messed up. And so, and that's just because I know that Mara is thinking and doing a lot of messed up stuff. And, you know, you want there to be a voice in the book of somebody who can call her out on that. So that's a purpose Jupiter serves. But also there's this, you know, I grew up in a small town and I've lived in cities for my entire adult life. Like I moved away for college and I've just lived in cities since then. And I feel really at home in urban areas. I have a huge group of queer friends in Los Angeles who I love and very creative. And yet sometimes I think about moving back to a small town. I think about what that would be like, or moving to a rural area. I wonder, you know, would I be safe? My wife and I just adopted a baby. Am I interested in raising a child in a town like that? Would he be safe? Would he be picked on for having two moms? These are all questions I ask myself. And so in some ways, this character of Jupiter is like sort of me testing out this idea of like, what would it feel like to be back in a small town after so many years in the city? Like, right. What would I miss and what would be better about it?
It probably depends on what state that small town is in and if there's like avocado farms instead of, you're like, okay, we're good. We're safe here. We know we're good. And there's no churches you're like, okay, we're good. But you know, that's tough to avoid in the United States of America, those certain types of things. But, I will say that Jupiter there is not from this town, but there sort of arrives with a small connection, which we won't, talk about because it's a spoiler. And it's a really cool, that was a really fun thing in the book too, to once, you know, the light bulb goes off in your own head, talk about me, the reader. It's like, oh, okay, cool.
Oh, that's cool. That's what Jupiter is doing here.
Yeah. That makes sense. She just doesn't love sheep. Because she has no idea how to take care of them. What is she doing here? like I said, I flew through this book. I really loved it. And I mean, we haven't even gotten into the Elkhorn Five, which are all great in their own way. And then Carly Nakata is such a great character, even though she has a rough start to this, to this story. and in a lot of ways, she helps Mara as far as, you know, identity and orientation goes, for sure, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And we don't have time to get into why, but she's a great character. And what I really love too is even, you know, not just the Elkhorn Five, but even sort of the B level, the you know, the second tier girls in this book, like the volleyball players, Maria, and there was another one I can't remember right now, I'm sorry, but there was sort of like some B level characters, girls, volleyball players, who are supportive as well.
Yeah.
It's not like I sort of like the cynicism in me kept waiting for like the bully girls, right? Like the rich preppy girls to like be really mean and cruel and stuff like that. So, right. That like that, and that's just me thinking the typical high school, hyper realized versions that they fucking give us all the time. Right.
Right.
Like you have to have women fighting each other. You have to, that's just how, what, isn't that great to watch? Like two women going at it. Right. It's like this, this gross fucking like thing that they hand us all the time. So like I'm conditioned to that. So I kept waiting for that. And I get, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that, you know what, that doesn't really happen in this book. And I thought that was really cool. So,
well, yeah, that was important to me because in the beginning of the book, there's a scene where Mara tries to go to volleyball practice once and like has just the most sexist things to think and say about the other volleyball players. And so it was important to me that by the end of the book, she like actually has a like more supportive relationship with these girls and is like, well, they support me. And I, actually they went to state this year and it sounds like they're pretty good. And you know, like,
yeah, like, so yeah, we're not twins, but like, it's, you know, they were always really nice to me, even so I'm not into the same thing. It was really great. I really love that aspect of it. Britta, I thought that was really cool because like I said, we're conditioned to think women are supposed to always be rivals.
Yeah.
And as hard as Mara tries to be rivals with the girls, in the end, I think they come to a really beautiful a middle ground. You know, and like, you know, we're not all the same, but we can all be on one team at least. So really, really, really cool. So this will come out a couple days after the release. So good luck with the launch. I hope it goes really well for you. BrittaLundin.com, spelt London with an I. Is where you want to go to find out all the events that Britta's got going on for the release week and future. So I think you can tell I'm not prone to bullshit. So it's, I really had a good time reading this book and I'm forever grateful to Dahlia for telling me about it. So we barely scratched the surface too. That's the nice thing. There's so much stuff that goes on in this book and some of it's not always nice and good time reading. So there's some, you think you can imagine that the boys, they start to react a certain way and it's not always nice. So, although there are some boys that are nice in this book, but there is some stuff that goes on that's not always pleasant, but
yeah, not all men.
Yeah. So anyways, Britta, thanks so much for coming on the show. Have a great launch and good luck with future. Are you going to do some more books, you think, or?
Oh yeah. I think there's more books in my future.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, we look forward to that.
There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Britta for taking the time to chat. I had a great time. Like Other Girls, this is a great read and I definitely recommend it. And it's out now, so head on over to BrittaLundin.com or wherever you buy your books and order a copy today. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen and head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.